morning.
Good morning, Sai.
I've been thinking about how, in my own history of practice, how slowly over time, life gets richer and richer. You know, there's two shoots in Zen. One is the Soto Zen, and it really doesn't use koans. It's called the gradual practice. And then there's the Rinzai Zen, which is the sudden awakening. And in the Rinzai tradition, we use koans. Now this tradition, the White Plum tradition, actually mixes both together. But I think sometimes there's a misunderstanding caught up in the two practices. But each, whether it's sudden enlightenment based on koans or enlightenment that takes place over time, both are the same. I mean, they're different, but they're really the same. When we look at koans and the idea of sudden enlightenment, we think we sit around for a number of years and then all of a sudden, boom. But if you're working with a koan day after day, week after week, there's a gradual process that unfolds. And so it's sudden in a sense, but there's really a lot underneath that. And as this process goes on, it's not like a light switch. One day you're blah, and the next day, yahoo. If you observe or experience your life fully, you'll realize slowly over time, if you do this practice every day, faithfully, as much as you can, go to retreats as much as you can, you start opening up to life, and life gets richer and richer. And we don't have to wait till we're enlightened to experience that richness. So in this koan, Kichu makes carts. It's the eighth koan in the Mumen Kan, which I've mentioned this before. It has 48 koans. And each one of the koans has some aspect of the koan has to do with our essential nature. And so there are koans. This one in particular isn't in the Mumen Kan, but it's a sort of a famous one. And it's, what was your face before your mother was born? Can anybody tell me what your face looked like before your mother was born? And another one, a famous one, which is the first one in this book, is called, Does a Dog Have Buddha Nature? Another one might be, Who are you? Who are you? Tell me, who are you? I had an interesting experience. I do this work along with three people from the Zendo in Ridgewood. Joan Hobricks is the Roshi there. And she started a while ago a program working in the prisons using meditation and some of the teachings of koans and from Buddhism, things that would apply to their men, things that would apply. And one of the interesting things was the reframe that don't look at prison as prison, look at it as the monastery and sit as much as you can. On the other side of that is, unless you have the right attitude, the monastery can become a prison. There's always a flip side. So this koan, who are you? We've been working, or we're finished now, but we were working with the Heart Sutra. And there's that part, no eye, ear, nose, body, mind. And so that's about emptying ourselves. You know, emptiness is who we are when we let go of all everything that we see which produces thoughts, everything that we experience in our body that produces thoughts. We empty all of that out. But it's a hard thing to convey if you haven't had the experience. And I had this idea, and it just popped into my head, that I was going to use the koan, who are you? And so when I got there, just luckily enough, there were an even number of guys. I think there were 12 men. So I asked them to face the person next to them. And the idea was I wanted them to take turns. So if I'm doing this with Dave, I would say, Dave, who are you? And Dave might say, I'm a Zen student. And then Dave would ask me, and I might say, I'm a father. And I just keep going back and forth, back and forth. And then I ask them to raise your hand when you find yourself with nothing else to say. And then so say Dave says, he stops. He's got nothing else to say. So he would raise his hand. And then he would just keep questioning me, asking me, to tell him who I am. Now, the hunch that I had was, once we run out of things to say who we are, that's the experience. You know, I got nothing more to say. In a sense, we're now empty of who we are. So I did this, and it was really amazing. It was just every now and then you experiment, you know. And so when I asked them to process their experience, what they sort of said was this, that when I had nothing else to say, my experience was that the room started to get bigger. Sort of people in the world started to become part of me. And I don't want to be too dramatic, but there were other things that I can't recall. I was no longer present in the usual sense. And so it was interesting because in doing this, I think they had a little glimpse, a little taste of what the experience is when we empty out ourselves of our conventional identity. Nothing bad happens. They came right back into their conventional identity. You know, people worry that, well, if I lose, then I'm going to, you know, go crazy or lose myself. And it doesn't really happen. So let me just read this koan. It's very brief. Now, Kishu is credited with having invented the cart. I guess I'm somewhat skeptical. I mean, the cart hasn't been invented before. This is in the 18th century. But anyway, they throw him a bone. So Master Gitan asked a monk, Kichu made 100 carts. If he took off both wheels, removed the axles, what would he make clear about the cart? So our ordinary nature, not our true nature, but our ordinary nature, and in the end they're really the same thing, but we talk about them as two things, as a way of helping us understand. So our ordinary nature was just the conventional way of seeing the world. And in this way of seeing the world, a book is a book, a building is a building, a garden is a garden, my mother is my mother, a cart is a cart, and each has its own set of characteristics and is separate from the other. And these characteristics can be different, if that's what the idea that our mind creates. And so it goes on. A garden is not a street. A book is not a ladle. A cart is not a garage. And our ordinary mind is the sum total of all these identities that we create. That's our world. And obviously it's a world of separation. You know, Jeff is a lawyer. He has a wife. He's two kids. And he's got all these characteristics. And that's who Jeff is. That's his identity. And I'm a father. I'm a Zen teacher. I'm retired. And those are my characteristics. Jeff's not Carl. That's clear. He's not. He's Jeff sitting right there. And I'm Carl over here with my own set of characteristics sitting here. Now, Mumun's commentary on the koan is, if you can realize this at once, your eye will be like a shooting star and your spiritual activity like catching lightning. So, this goes back to my question. When we remove the wheels and take off the axles, what is it then? Now, the ordinary mind would say, well, without axles, without wheels, it's not really a cart. It no longer meets the definition of a cart. And it no longer serves the activity of a cart. Now, like many koans, the cart's a metaphor. We're not really taking it literally. The cart. From the essential nature point of view, if we remove both wheels and the axle, they are still part of the cart. If we identify Jeff with a series of characteristics and we identify me with a series of characteristics, those things, as I just said, separate us. They make us different. But at the same time, from the experience of essential nature, we're not different. We are the same. Now, Jeff may not like the idea that I'm saying he's the same as me. He might prefer to be Jeff. But from the essential nature, from the essential point of view, Jeff, you have no choice. You're stuck with being me.
Could be worse.
Not much. So from the essential point of view, things, identities, while appearing individual and separate, are really always one. Now, we know this, you know, everybody knows this really from reading all the Zen books. But if we are attached to the idea, if Jeff is attached to the idea that he is who he is separate from me, and I'm attached to the idea of who I am and separate from him, then we're missing the experience of our essential nature. And the most common word that's used for essential nature is the experience of oneness. Basho has a haiku. In Kyoto, hearing the cuckoo, I long for Kyoto. So the first Kyoto is the conventional Kyoto, the one that's busy and the markets are active and people are walking around and so forth. Right? It's the everyday Kyoto, the hustle and bustle of city life. And because of that hustle and bustle and all these individual activities, he's saying, I long for Kyoto. And the longing for Kyoto is his longing for connection to his beloved city, which he's lost. And so he says, hearing the cuckoo. And hearing the cuckoo is like a teacher yelling at a retreat, wake up. Right? Hearing the cuckoo is like the temple bell. He becomes one with the cuckoo, and he's returned. His sense is returned to Kyoto. Even though it's hustling and bustling, he again returns to being one with his beloved town. So as I said, sometimes, or many times, the realization of this essential nature seems as if it's all of a sudden out of nowhere, which in a sense it is. But there's a lot that goes into our practice before that happens. So how does this apply to our practice? Yamada says, well, hey, look, if you're working with Mu, you must treat the cart as nothing other than Mu. The cart is just another way of saying Mu. Mu is the process of coming to not the idea, but the experience of essential nature, the experience of all things being one. If you are counting your breath, the cart is nothing but counting your breaths. You're not separate from your breath. You're one with your breath. And then there's one more step. No you, no breath. Just as soon as you think about the activity of breathing, you've created two again. So there's no one breathing and there's no breath. It's just the activity of breathing without naming it. And that's the essential nature of breathing. How beautiful the daffodils left unnamed. That's how beautiful the daffodils are when we don't separate them by naming them daffodils. And that means you lean over and you bring your nose to the daffodil, and it's just, no one's smelling, no daffodil. That's the most direct experience of a daffodil. But this koan also applies to our lives. If we realize our essential nature, we discover that beneath the appearance of things being this and that, there is really unity. I am the daffodil. I am the cart. I am you. I am one with everything. No matter how many concepts, how many identities, how many words, I am Jeff. Now, the realization of that truth is really quite beautiful. It totally changes the nature of my relationship with Jeff, or spreading it much greater, my relationship with the universe. I become alive in ways that before I started this practice were unimaginable. Even, as we mentioned yesterday, even the simplest and the most broken things are beautiful. That's because we're experiencing them directly. They don't have the word broken. They don't have the word individual parts. And really, the word beautiful comes after the direct experience. It's a way of communicating. But the mind says, well, this is broken, and this is whole, and this is bright, and this is dull, and all of that, right? But that creates a distance. That creates the separation between us and the direct experience. and I've mentioned this probably 1,000 times before, but just on a very simple human level, if I know that underneath our individual characteristics, that Jeff is me, how can I not be compassionate to him? How can I not want to offer myself to him if he needs help? How can I not appreciate who he really is beyond all the different identities that he has? So this experience of oneness, which is part of the practice, and which goes on forever, by the way. It's not a trip from one train station to the next. You get off and now you're at your destination. The destination is just another idea. So, one last thing, that if we embody this koan, our heart's open, and we love our life, we love each other, and we love the universe. So, thank you. Take care of your carts.